It is my favorite time of year. The NHL offseason chaos is about to ensue. The draft is 2 days away. NHL free agency is upon us. Restricted free agency. New general managers getting hired. Trades, signings, and the moves that certain teams need to make this specific season. All that and more is coming up here in episode 140 of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Pumped for today's episode, folks, and there is a boatload of news to get to that has transpired over the last week or so. We will get to all of it today and more and tee up what's coming up in the next few weeks or so. Welcome to the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Kyle Grimard, your host, as always. You can follow along on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, Instagram, and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast. I've written two articles in the last week on the Vancouver Canucks, one breaking down a potential new deal for Bo Horvat, and, you know, the different options for Brock Besser, which, of course, he signed. We'll get to that in just a little bit. And the one area the Canucks don't really have to worry about, and that is in goal. If you want to go read those, they are at the Hockey Writers, and I'm working on a piece right now discussing what this means for JT Miller. We teed up everything already in the show. NHL draft is 2 days away. Canadians with the first pick. There is a brand new general manager in San Jose. I feel like this was a long process, but it finally got done. But it's there's a reason. It's breaking news. It is history in the making. We'll discuss that. Kevin Fiala got traded to the Kings. Ryan McDonagh got traded to the Predators. Brock Besser has got a new 3-year deal locked up in Vancouver. And this might be the last year of the Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe era. I feel like there's a couple moves that this team has to make to go for it, even if it's for just 1 year, especially if it may or may not be their final year. We'll get to all of that. We'll get to the draft in a second, but this was just announced today. The San Jose Sharks have announced Mike Greer, former NHL player, is the new general manager of the San Jose Sharks. Sportsnet can confirm this. He is the first black man in NHL history to hold the position. Now, on my notes, I write down what the title of the headline is and how I want to spin it. And what I had written down originally was, this was a long process and feel like they got dragged out for some time, but it's finally done. And there was a lot of talk and a lot of speculation. 32 Thoughts, the podcast, I feel like I'd been bringing this up for the last 5-6 weeks. The Sharks were doing all this. There was all these headline news, a lot of conversations about it. But Mike Greer, who played 14 seasons in the National Hockey League, beginning back in 1996, three of them, by the way, were with the Sharks. His last season was in Buffalo, where he retired from playing in 2011. The history is, we have finally started to get females into the executive positions in the NHL. Haley Wickenheiser was just announced as the new assistant general manager for the Toronto Maple Leafs. That was in my news later, but this pertains to it. And we're seeing that trend. The Vancouver Canucks have done a really good job with a couple of female hirees as assistant GMs. But never in the history of the NHL has a black man been the general manager of an organization. Today that ends. Mike Greer, 47 years of age, will replace interim general manager Mike Will, who took over when Doug Wilson stepped away. This was back in November of 2021. So while the quote-unquote resignation was in April, Wilson held the position for 19 years. And this has been a long process for San Jose, trying to find eventually the new permanent general manager. They like what Mike Will did, but they wanted the wholehearted full-time general manager, and they took their time. They evaluated all their options. They went through the process, but it came down to a couple former players that were close with the organization, and Mike Greer was the one that stood out, and good on the San Jose Sharks to make this. What they were talking about, too, I heard a lot about this, but they wanted someone that, one, had been around the organization before, two, was a former player who could kind of get that reliability. We are seeing it now with guys like Steve Yzerman, Brendan Shanahan, who are in these big positions, Joe Sakic, who just won a Stanley Cup, but former players who are now in executive roles and general manager roles who can come from the player side of view, right? It's very good for negotiating. It's very good for signing players who are either already on the team or trying to bring in free agents. Mike Greer, who is Detroit-born but Massachusetts-raised, had held various non-playing positions, actually, since he retired. I don't know if a lot of people knew this, but he spent two seasons behind the bench as an assistant with the New Jersey Devils from 2018 to 2020. Last year, he was hired as an advisor to hockey operations by the Rangers. He's also served as a scout for the Blackhawks between 2014 and 2018 as well. Huge congratulations to Mike Greer. There was not a better way to start this topic and this podcast off today. We have a ton to get to, but this was just announced, and I waited this long to record, and we're waiting until the afternoon here on Tuesday, but I wanted this to be confirmed before I then went and recorded the podcast. There was a lot of speculation, and it was going to happen. I had pulled the article here from Sportsnet, quote unquote, can confirm, but it is now official. Mike Greer is the new general manager. So congratulations to him. Congratulations to the Sharks. So I felt like this thing was going on for so long, and I heard so many different comments about it. I'm like, just pick someone already. But they finally did it. Congratulations to them, and good luck to Mike Greer moving forward. The first black man to be a general manager in the NHL. Awesome stuff. All right. 2 days away, NHL draft is upon us. Montreal Canadiens, who are not only hosting event, have 14 picks in this year's draft, two in the opening four rounds, and of course, the number one overall pick. It's the first time they've had it since 1980. Now there's talk and conversation about whether Montreal is going to keep it, trade it away. More likely, they're going to keep it. Now there's a decision, evidently, right now. For the Montreal Canadiens, it's between Shane Wright of the Kingston Frontenac Center, Juraj Slefkowski, of course, the winger from Europe, who is kind of the back-and-forth 1-2 right now. It's basically between those two. Logan Cooley's also a name that comes up there, but he'll probably be in the top five. That's probably going to be the 1-2-3 order. Wright, Slefkowski, and then Cooley. Here's what I think here. The Montreal Canadiens, for as long as I can remember them being a franchise, especially the last, I don't know, decade or so, what's been the one thing that Montreal has always quote-unquote coveted but never really addressed? Center. They've had wingers. They've had the Alex Kovalevs. Right? They've had the guys off the wing come in. Wing has never really been like, I mean, scoring has always been a talked about topic, but like guys like Mike Camilleri have come in there as well. But outside of, you know, when they had the Deneau and Plekanec and, you know, going back to Saku Koivu years, Montreal, I feel like for the last few years, has always talked about they want to bring in a bona fide top six center. They drafted Suzuki. He was that guy. They've had Kotkaniemi. They had Deneau. Unfortunately, Kotkaniemi gets the offer sheet, goes to Carolina. Deneau then goes to the Kings. Artturi Lehkonen's no longer a part of the organization as well. Now, they traded for Christian Dvorak, but he's not really a bona fide top six center. Montreal did the thing that they always do, and they try to force a winger slash center to really play full-time center when they're not destined for it. They tried to do the same thing with Jonathan Drouin. It didn't work. Max Domi eventually wanted out as well because it didn't work. Don't overthink this. Take what you've been complaining about for years. Take the center. Yes, would you like someone else to play with Nick Suzuki? Sure. You've also got Cole Caulfield, who all I hear about is how great of a goal scorer he is, how great of a winger he is. Great. So you don't need one of those. You know what you need? Another center. Go get the center that is going to solve a lot of your problems. The comp all I'm seeing around is Patrice Bergeron, and Patrice Bergeron has a Hall of Fame resume. Stanley Cup, multi-Selke wins, right? Bona fide two-way center. Go get the guy that's comp to him. Seriously. Shane Wright, who is granted exceptional status in the Ontario Hockey League, who is now the captain of the Kingston Frontenacs. He is one of the top prospect available right now. Let's just go to his stats last year. Remember, this is as a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, whatever the case. 63 games, 94 points. In his rookie year as a 15-year-old, in 58 games, had 66 points. 39 of them were goals. The World Junior Hockey Championships, the Canada U18s, he had 14 points in 5 games. This is not one you overthink. It's not. It's not one you overthink. I feel like this is very similar to the, not very similar, but just hear me out here based on the metaphor. Shane Wright, natural center, top 6, exceptional status in the OHL, could be a star in the NHL. Auston Matthews. I'm not comparing them. I'm just for reference here. Bonafide center, right? Could be a top 6, could be a franchise center. And then Slafkowski, who's this stud scoring winger, dark horse to be the first overall pick, the Slovak professional hockey player in the Finnish league, right? He's the fancy player who you're like, oh, maybe he might go, right? You go through his stats. And in TPS in Liga last year in 31 games, right, had 10 points. TPS on the U20s, he had 18 points in 11 games. He's a fairly big dude, right? 6'4", 220 pounds. Patrick Laine, scoring winger from Finland. Big guy, 6'3", 6'4", 200 plus pounds. Conversations about Matthews Laine. Look how that's panned out. Laine can still shoot the puck. Laine can still score. Laine's got a great attitude. I love the attitude, the way Patrick Laine comes off. You go back to that draft class, 2016, I believe. You taking Laine over Matthews? Don't overthink this. Montreal, don't overthink this. I think that there will be a lot of people not thrilled if Shane Wright's not the guy that goes. Now, I've had the luxury of watching Shane Wright. You know, I do some work with the London Knights. I've watched Shane Wright play. There are games in the OHL where you notice he's not McDavid, where he is skating past guys with ease. But he's 6 foot and growing, 6'1". He is a very, very, very good two-way center who's only been able to adapt at every single league he's played in and thrived in the role that he's been given. He will do that in Montreal because he's probably not going to play over Nick Suzuki, but he'll be the second line center. He will maybe be a point per game guy and he'll stabilize that position. Maybe he's going to be way better than I'm thinking. I have been wrong about players before and prospects before. Maybe he ends up being one of the greatest centers to ever play the game of hockey. I don't know. But I've had the chance to watch him. I've seen what he can do at the OHL level. Sometimes things translate differently up a level. But don't overthink this. If you're the Montreal Canadiens, you don't have Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Philip Deneau's gone. You've got Christian Dvorak, who kind of filled in at center, but he wasn't really. You got Suzuki and then question marks. Go fill that question mark with a draft pick that could change your franchise and be a part of your franchise for the next 10 to 15 years. There are scoring wingers out there. There are some that are generational. There are some that project better than what they actually end up being. Don't overthink this. I'm not going to sit here and try to explain all the different draft picks and all the different players. I don't know it, but the first round begins Tuesday. Montreal, do not overthink this situation. Do not overthink it. We'll see what happens moving forward. All right, on to the next bit of news before we get to the trades that took place. So free agency is upon us. A lot of news and speculation going on right now. The latest one coming from the Edmonton Oilers camp that they are among some of the teams interested in UFA Claude Giroux. Edmonton is doing its due diligence on the veteran winger in the event it cannot re-sign fellow UFA Evander Kane. Now, Kane, a little bit younger, was a great fit. Claude Giroux was a great fit when he was in Florida. Listen, if I was Edmonton, I'd do Kane first. I'd go sign Kane first over Giroux. Age, a little younger. He already played with the team, and you know it works. Sometimes when you bring a player over, it doesn't necessarily work. Now, it's easy to work with McDavid and Draisaitl, but Kane worked. They loved him in the dressing room. Kane's probably looking to make a little bit of money, but if you're Edmonton, you've got some contracts you can get rid of that you can make that happen. That would be the guy I wouldn't go. Giroux is also garnering interest from the Ottawa Senators. Ottawa's an interesting fit. They also just bought out Colin White, who had 3 years and about $15 million left on a deal. Ottawa's making room. I wonder if Ottawa's at the point where they're going to start signing some guys and bringing them in and try to see how competitive they are next year. Colin White seemed to be the odd man out. They've got Drake Batherson. They've got Stützle and they've got Chabot and a bunch of other young talent. They might be shopping Connor Brown as well to clear up more cap. Giroux coming in there and being a little bit more of a veteran guy would make a lot of sense there. But a lot of teams around the Giroux front, Edmonton and Ottawa were the two notable teams that I heard of. Marc-Andre Fleury, apparently no decision right now on whether he's going to go back to Minnesota or not. One of the teams that is in on Marc-Andre Fleury and linked, the Toronto Maple Leafs. There haven't been any reports or links coming out about conversations with Jack Campbell. Personally, I love Fleury in Toronto. I think that's an immediate upgrade. It's a win now move. You could get him on a 2-year deal. He's got plenty of game left at 37. Probably a little bit like of a better version of a guy like Mike Smith, though. He played very well in the playoffs up until that final round against Colorado, and Colorado was just a better team at that point. But if I am in a position where I'm a general manager, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later on, I don't want to spoil it, but if you're Kyle Dubas and you're looking to make an upgrade in net, that'd be the move I would go get. I would go get a guy like Fleury, or I would go get a little bit more of an established goaltender versus maybe a project like a Mackenzie Blackwood. I like Alexander Georgiev, but again, he's still got some question marks around him. So Fleury's got some conversations there. I think Edmonton's also looked into Fleury. They're looking at the goaltending market, but like I said, Edmonton is looking more on the Ville Husso mark. They're also looking more maybe towards a guy like Darcy Kemper and Jack Campbell among some of the different names. Let's kind of stay around the Toronto area right now, and guys like Ilya Mikheyev are garnering some interest right now. Apparently their camp wants anywhere in a long-term deal between $4.75 to $5.5 million. Listen, I watched a lot of Toronto. I'm a fan of them. I watched Ilya Mikheyev play. I like him as a player. He had 21 goals this season. I'm pretty sure like 7, 8, maybe even 9 of them were empty netters. And the year before, he broke his hand and he had very, very early struggles on finishing around the net. I'm afraid a team is going to pay a lot of money. And there are teams that will pay a lot of money to get a player like that. Seattle could be a team that needs to get to the floor. I could see a team like maybe New Jersey going after a player like that. I could see a team like Arizona paying for a player like that. Arizona had $25 million come off their cap this year. That could be, you know, something that they get. But for Mikheyev, are you willing to take a little bit less money to go try and win somewhere? Now, it might not be in Toronto, and that's fine. But I think that's a way too much amount of money considering guys like Andrew Kopp and Nick Paul, who are potentially similar players. Nick Paul got $3.1 million. Kopp, I could understand getting $5 million, but that's the idea right now. I think that's way too much money, but nevertheless, Toronto has apparently been rumored to be seeing if a team would like to buy the rights to sign Mikheyev early. I believe they're doing the same thing with Jack Campbell as well. Maybe there's a situation they get like a sixth or fifth round pick for it out of the deal. I don't know. We'll see. But I think within the coming days, especially around the draft could be fireworks because that's when I think everyone's getting together. Conversations could be had. Picks could be getting swapped. Apparently, Montreal's trying to move up again in the draft. Teams like New Jersey are potentially wanting to move the second pick. I don't know. It's an absolute whirlwind right now. But the Mikheyev front is pretty wild to me. So we'll see what happens moving forward. Let's get some other news and rumors around right now. A lot of it garnering around Chicago Blackhawks forward Alex DeBrincat. Apparently, teams have been calling and inquiring about him. Evidently, according to 32 Thoughts, the podcast as well, there was a team that made an offer. I believe it was a first-round pick, another high pick the next year, and a player and a prospect, or just a player, for DeBrincat. And Chicago said no. So Chicago's looking for a monster end of the deal. Two other players as well, JT Miller and Connor Garland of the Vancouver Canucks are garnering interest after the deal with Brock Besser. It seems that Miller and Garland could be two players that are on their way out. Edmonton Oilers and RFA Jesse Puljujarvi. Winnipeg Jets forwards Blake Wheeler, Pierre-Luc Dubois are other players that could potentially be gone as well. The Minnesota Wild are a couple teams that is a team that could be looking to do that after their trade. They traded away Kevin Fiala. Another player, Jacob Chychrun. Remember that whole conversation around the trade deadline? And there's a lot of talk about Chychrun. A deal never got done with Arizona because of an injury that was sustained. That name could be coming up. He's still only 24. He's got a few years left on a very, very team-friendly deal right now. So be very, very interesting to see what happens surrounding him. And, you know, the conversations are just going to come up and more players' names are going to rise over the next little while as well. So we'll see what happens in the next coming days, not just to the draft, but also to free agency. I believe the RFA day is the 11th of July, and then free agency is the 13th. So that is coming up very quickly, and I feel like more news and rumors are going to start really flooding in over the next little bit as well. I'm excited for it. Again, my favorite time of year is this. So let's get to the trades here. So the LA Kings acquire forward Kevin Fiala from the Minnesota Wild and sign him to a 7-year contract. So the trade was for pending restricted free agent Kevin Fiala. His rights go to the Kings in exchange for the 2022 first round pick and prospect Brock Faber. The Kings and then signed Fiala to a 7-year deal with an average annual value of $7.875 million. There is a no movement clause for three seasons beginning in 2023-2024. Fiala had a breakthrough season, 33 goals, 85 points in 82 games. He had 27 goals and 67 points at even strength, which a team like the LA Kings welcomes very much so. They were one of the bottom 10 in 5-on-5 goals last season. And then Fiala, unfortunately, during the playoffs, he faded just a little bit. Only had 3 assists in 6 games in the first round against the Blues. The Wild, the reason they made this deal was they are going to be entering a cap crunch this season, and it's going to be tough after they bought out the remaining 4 years, if you remember, of Ryan Suter's and Zach Parise's deals. The pair will cost for $13 million against the cap next year and $14.7 million in 2023-24 and 2024-25 seasons. Let me say that again. $13 million will count against the cap for Suter and Parise to not play in Minnesota. That is why Kevin Fiala got traded. Now, while general manager Bill Guerin told reporters after the trade got done that he said there was virtually no chance for Minnesota to retain him, he just said, we had to go with a team that we thought was a good fit. The Kings were a team that made a fair offer. They sent over a first-round pick, and then, of course, Faber, who is a 19-year-old defenseman. He was selected by the Kings in the second round in 2020. He had 2 goals and 12 assists in 32 games for the University of Minnesota, so actually feels really good. A bit of a hometown boy coming back to Minnesota. He's going to play the final season, I believe, there, and then join the team. And then, of course, now they have 2 picks, number 19 and 24 in this year's draft. For both teams, it's a win for both sides. Why? One, the LA Kings obviously get the player they want in Kevin Fiala. They get a 7-year deal at a fairly good cap hit at just 25 years of age. He signed till 32, which is like prime years you're buying out of a player. It's going to improve your 5-on-5 scoring, potentially your power play. You've got wingers on both sides now to complement your center depth, which includes Anze Kopitar, Byfield, Deneau. You've got Victor Arvidsson and Alex Iafallo and a bunch of other players. Solid goaltending, Cal Peterson. Drew Doughty's coming back from injury. I like this team moving forward. For the Wild, Bill Guerin said it. We're not going to be able to re-sign Kevin Fiala. They get a first-round pick out of it, and a really good defensive prospect to help come in and not replace, but just be a part of a solid defensive unit that has players like Jonas Brodin, Jared Spurgeon, among others. I mean, it's a good fit there. So they get another defensive prospect to work in. They get that first round pick. I'm assuming they're going to have a little bit of money, maybe go get a couple cheap options to kind of fill up the roster. And then, you know, last year was the year they went for it, right? They make the big deal. They have Kaprizov signed. They make the trade for Fleury. They know that, you know, it's going to be kind of tough. They try to clear out some cap room, and now they're just going to kind of, I would say, wait it out for the next 3 seasons while this dead money sits on the books. And then once that gets freed up, it's really going to help things out. So I think it's good for both teams. I don't think there was a whole lot that Minnesota could do. So the fact they get a first and a defensive prospect that is cheap and they don't have to pay for a little bit. And on top of that, the Kings, they get a player that can go right into their top six. It's beneficial. They signed him. I think regardless, it worked out for both sides. All right. The other trade that took place, the Tampa Bay Lightning dealt defenseman Ryan McDonagh to the Nashville Predators for blue liner Philippe Myers and forward Grant Mismatch, a team announced on Sunday. McDonagh's agent came out and said it's tough. He's been there for 4 years, won a couple of cups, been to the finals for 3 years in a row. All of a sudden, he's told you're not coming back. We can't have you back. There's an emotional connection. It's very tough. We figured something was coming. The Lightning were going to lose something from this team. And I know they were getting emotional, and I know a lot of people were seeing that, being like, you've already been to two cup finals. It doesn't mean it's not a crappy situation when you're a player, because you're going to look to a player who makes a decent amount of money and be like, we got to cut you to keep this thing going, right? You want to keep the body alive. You got to cut off a limb to do so. Ryan McDonagh was the limb in this situation. And McDonagh apparently said his head was spinning when the exit meeting took place because he knew what was going to happen. So this is crazy. So this trade happens. A lot of people are dunking on the Tampa Bay Lightning. I get why. They didn't get necessarily a player or a pick in return that is sufficient enough to what Ryan McDonagh brings to your organization. Nashville wins this deal, but for Tampa Bay, it was necessary. Let me tell you why. In return, they get a defenseman, 25-year-old Philippe Myers. Analytically, he was not great last year. He kind of was up and down between the NHL and the AHL with Nashville. We have seen defensemen come into Tampa Bay's organization and sneakily play well and fill out a roster spot. I have a sneaky feeling. Philippe Myers is big. He's like 6'6", 6'7". You pair him with a guy like Sergachev, or you pair him with a really solid back-end defenseman. He can play on your bottom pair. And on top of it, too, they've got Jan Ruda. They've got Eric Chernak. And on the left side, to replace McDonagh, you've got Mikhail Sergachev. So it's not like there's a gaping hole for Tampa Bay that they now have to go out and sign a player who is as efficient as McDonagh and hopefully cheaper in order to make this thing work. They've got the pieces within the organization where it's not as big of a blow. Now, I heard this from 32 Thoughts. It made a lot of sense. But it was already obvious to me. And again, they've brought in guys like David Savard and Zach Bogosian, and Luke Shen was on this team, and were very solid pieces and made impacts to their back-to-back cup wins. I can see this happening. I don't know about Luke Shen, by the way. I think I just made that up. But I can see this being a sneaky good move for Philippe Myers in a winning culture, winning organization, to go into Tampa, play a bottom-pairing role, and get sheltered minutes and be productive as a part of this team. It gives Sergachev a little bit more opportunity to play in a higher position. Hedman set, Ruda set, Chernak set. Now you kind of got a bottom pairing guy who's only making like, what, $1 million or so? And now they've got money to go and they re-sign Nick Paul to that 7-year extension we'll get to. They've got money to keep Andre Plott. Tampa Bay has lost too many forwards to free agency because of the cap. And it's what happens in the cap era. But they have lost Yanni Gord to the expansion draft. They've lost Blake Coleman, Barclay Goodrow, Tyler Johnson, who just made too much money and just kind of faded a little bit. I think this is Tampa being like, we're so sick and tired of losing forwards. They made the deal. And McDonagh's not old, but he's 33. Got a lot of good years left. I think there's 3 years left on his deal. I think 3 or 4. But Palat was drafted by this team. He was developed by this team. He was coached by John Cooper in the AHL, along with Gord and Tyler Johnson and Braden Point. And I just think Tampa's like, we're not losing another forward. I know they've kept Point. I know they've kept Sergachev. I know that they've kept a bunch of other players. But I feel like for Tampa, they could make this work. It was a necessary move. It was one of those things where, like, you know it's not going to be the outcome you hope for, but it's necessary to do to keep this team competitive and keep them at least afloat. and Tampa Bay just went to three straight cup finals. They're still going to be there. They're going to have the scoring depth. Sergachev is going to be fantastic. There's definitely a hole with McDonough not being there. But Tampa Bay's Tampa Bay. So apparently nobody wanted him moving, and apparently the team is crushed that McDonough, unfortunately, is gone. This is crazier, though. This story came out. Yeah, he's got 4 years left, by the way, $6.75 million. There apparently was a deal in place. I read this online. It's not in the article. For Tampa Bay to waive McDonough and for the Columbus Blue Jackets to claim him off of waivers. I don't know what was in it for Tampa Bay, but apparently there was something there. And McDonough said, absolutely not. I do not want to go there. I don't think he was thrilled to go there, but I think he had more of an option to go to a team in Nashville who did make the playoffs, could always use the defensive help. They've got a good goaltender. They're trying to keep some of their forwards there. So at least he had a little bit more of a say here. It's in the other conference, so it doesn't really affect Tampa overly. And of course, you know, Nashville gets way better. Now, Nashville's still trying to figure out what's going on right now with Philip Forsberg, but they just got a whole lot better defensively. Their left side features Roman Josi, Matias Ekholm, and now Ryan McDonough. Why is Nashville always loaded defensively? They get rid of defensemen left, right, and center and still somehow have an abundance of them. They've gotten rid of Ryan Suter, Shea Weber, Ryan Ellis, and they're still popping out these absolute studs and bringing guys on. It's remarkable. I find it so fantastic. So congratulations. I just got the message, by the way, 3 minutes ago. San Jose Sharks officially named Mike Greer general manager of the San Jose Sharks. I thought it had been like official because I've seen a number of posts about it. But about 2 o'clock here, it is now official. But great move by Nashville, seizing the opportunity and taking it. They get rid of a player in Philippe Myers who they waived earlier and were looking to move on to. Tampa Bay at least gets a body that could come in and play in their bottom six. And then for Nashville drafted him in the second round in 2017. He's 23 years of age. He has yet to play in the NHL. He had 12 points in 57 AHL games last season. All right, let's get to another one of the signings after a couple of the trades. The Vancouver Canucks. They signed Brock Besser to a 3-year, kind of like a second bridge contract with an AAV of $6.65 million. They announced on Friday, they said, we're very happy to have worked out a new deal for Brock. It's only less than $1 million more than what he was originally making, which was a 3-year, $5.875 million cap hit. So 800 grand more, essentially, if that, maybe nine. He's only 25 years of age. He can now reach unrestricted free agency at the end of his contract. He had 23 goals, 23 assists, and 71 games. He is beloved by his teammates in Vancouver. Beloved by the fans. I write for them. I'm on Twitter. I see what's written about him. I see what's said about him. He is loved in Vancouver. He is loved by his teammates in Vancouver. The new deal, by the way, also has a 10-team no-trade list in 2024-25. But I'm super happy for him, and I think he's very excited. A lot of news came out, unfortunately, with him and his father, who's been dealing with a lot of unfortunate circumstances, and said that last year was as tough a season as he has ever had. And he's happy to be staying for the next three seasons. He's happy to be back with his teammates and to build and hopefully continue to get better and better. What does this mean for the Vancouver Canucks and their cap situation? Let me tell you, according to Cap Friendly right now, the Vancouver Canucks have about $2.148 million. That is not including the players who are quote unquote on LTIR, which include Tucker Poolman, who has a cap hit of $2.5 million, Nils Höglander, who's entering the final year of his entry level deal, and then Brady Keeper is also on there as well with Brendan Sutter, who will be officially off it. Long-term IR also has a year left of Michael Furland. This is where things get tricky for the Vancouver Canucks. Next season, they have two players who will be set for unrestricted free agency. Three, if you include Andrei Kuzmenko, the Russian player who was just signed over from the KHL. JT Miller and Bo Horvat, entering years at age 27 and 29, will be UFAs. Both will command significant contracts. Horvat probably between the $8 and $9 million deal, maybe a little bit less if he takes a discount. JT Miller's probably getting $8.59, maybe more. What this tells me, what the Brock Besser deal tells me, is that JT Miller's the odd man out. Now I'd be like, why? Why wouldn't you say Horvat, Kyle? Well, Bo Horvat is a center. He's the captain. He was drafted by the organization and is one of the better face-off individuals around the league, face-off centerman. He's an incredible two-way player. And I just think with the draft capital that he has and the investment on that team, I think Horvat's the guy. I also think that they could look to move Miller now, get something for him, and move into next season. I'm not saying it's not that they don't want to keep JT Miller, but I'm thinking that based on what I'm looking at, and there are other options. I'm writing a piece on this. And they could move a defenseman like Oliver Ekman-Larsson or Tyler Myers. Myers has, I think, like, I don't know how many years left on his contract, but he makes $6 million a year. He's got 2 years left at $6 million. Maybe if they eat $1 million of that, they could move him. Ekman-Larsson's got 5 years left at 7.26. Quinn Hughes is locked. Now, this is a good deal. It's 7.85. But then all of a sudden, the year after, Elias Pettersson's going to be up for RFA status. Tanner Pearson, Jason Dickinson, Vasily Podkolzin is going to be another player. But the big one to me is Bo Horvat. And I think what that means for JT Miller is JT Miller could be a player on the move. We will see what transpires, but this deal, because Vancouver's taking calls on Miller, Besser, Garland even too. But with Besser signed, Besser's off the market. So now it's more down to Miller and Garland. Well, Garland's in a very team-friendly 4.95. He can be a 20-goal scorer, can play left or right wing. He's got 4 years left at a decent cap it. Miller's got 1 year left and will probably make $9 million next year. Vancouver cannot afford that, and they are going to have to make a decision. And instead of letting JT Miller leave for nothing, they're probably going to want to get something for him and then have the room to re-sign Bo Horvat to a brand new long-term extension for their captain. That's my thought, but that's immediately what I went to. And then they've got a bunch of other young guys who are going to be up who could make money. Thatcher Demko's locked into a contract. They will get some cap relief of $2.4 million after the buyouts of Braden Holtby and Jake Virtanen end. But I think that's what I'm seeing right there from the Vancouver Canucks. I don't know, but I mean, congratulations to Besser. I'm very curious as to what that means moving forward for guys like JT Miller. All right, the last thing that we're going to get to here. A lot of news and rumors about the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's a critical offseason for them. I feel like it always is. They've got about, I think, $7 million, maybe a little bit less as well. They've already locked up defenseman Mark Giordano to a 2-year, very team-friendly contract. And they're still looking for a goaltender. They are looking for a top-six winger. They have about $6.4 million to work with. They're potentially trying to move players like Peter Mrazek off the roster, maybe Alexander Kerfoot off the roster. Let's just get down to it right now. If this is Kyle Dubas's last year, because the last couple of years, like I think Kyle Dubas has done a great job in Toronto. I do. Do I think he's made some stupid signings? Absolutely. But at this time last year, I didn't mind the Peter Mrazek signing. I don't think anybody did. It was less than $4 million. It was a tandem goaltender to pair with Jack Campbell. What could go wrong? A lot could go wrong.
the Nick Ritchie signing. He was almost a 20-goal scorer in Boston. Big body presence, can play in your top six, maybe top nine, play in your second power play unit, be a net front presence. Every Boomer Leaf fan was screaming for that contract. It went horribly, horribly. Kyle Dubas succumbed to every Boomer's wish to get a big, physical scoring left winger who faded in about 3 months in Toronto and was moved miraculously to Arizona. And they still got back a defenseman who was physical, who played on the top pair with Morgan Riley. Dubas has also inked players like, I don't know, Andre Kasha, who worked out great. David Kampf, who nobody knew who that guy was crucial in the playoffs. Michael Bunting on a two-year contract for $950K. He was one of the finalists for the Calder Trophy. He also brought in TJ Brody, who is arguably one of the best defensemen on this team. He also was the guy who made the trade for Jack Campbell. He extended Morgan Riley to a great extension at $7.5 million. That contract is going to look great in a couple years. He might fade after a while, but after a couple years, the cap's going up. If this is truly Kyle Dubas' last final season, swing for the fences. Go for it. Go make a move and go sign Marc-Andre Fleury. Sign him on a two-year, $8.5 million deal. He's going to make 4 years. He's your starting goalie for the next 2 years. Boom. You don't got to think about it for two whole seasons. Great. And now that Brock Besser's locked up, go trade for JT Miller. Why not? If this is your last season, if it's like if Toronto doesn't make it past the first round this year, you're fired. Go trade for a player who has only one season left at a very reasonable cap hit. Trade Kerfoot to offset the money and go trade a draft pick or a prospect like Nick Robertson. I don't understand why you wouldn't do it. If this is your last season, go get that top six winger who everyone's been crying about for the last little while. Though we have five of the top six are locks. But this one is such a big deal. It's not like the Pittsburgh Penguins were just putting players with Sidney Crosby making that work. No. Not like Brian Bickle was playing with Jonathan Toews in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's fine, whatever. We need another bona fide guy. But you know what I mean? I would do this. If I was Dubas, I'd find a way to move Mrazek's money out. Go put him in, I don't know, Chicago's an area I've seen, New Jersey, Arizona, whatever. I'd go sign Marc-Andre Fleury and then a backup on the market, whoever's there for like, I don't know, a million or so. Right? Go get that Brian Elliott. Go get that Curtis McElhinney. If it were really up to me, I'd do this all in one swift motion. I'd go trade Peter Mrazek to the New Jersey Devils for Mackenzie Blackwood. New Jersey is apparently looking to move off Blackwood. They've got Nico Daws coming up in their system, who's a really, really good young goaltender. Mrazek can kind of play there for a little bit. It's not Arizona. And Toronto gets a little something back and then send a pick that way too to say thanks. Have Marc-Andre Fleury for then two seasons while Mackenzie Blackwood's your backup, gets solidified in the system, and then he can take over. If he works out, great. If he doesn't, it's probably not your problem anymore. So Mrazek's money's gone. For Vancouver, in return for JT Miller, you're giving them a forward they can play on their roster tomorrow who will give them a season at a slightly less cap hit. They might even be able to re-sign the dude because he's probably not going to cost $9 million. And on top of that, here's a prospect or a pick your way for your troubles. We're taking a player off your hands who you know you can't re-sign. We're giving you a roster player and a player of the future and or a pick. Toronto gets a chance to just go for him. Why wouldn't you do that? Nick Paul's not on the market. Andrew Kopp wants to stay in New York. Ilya Mikheyev wants as much money as JT Miller. So instead of re-signing Ilya Mikheyev at 5-2-5, Go trade for JT Miller and have him for a season and play him with John Tavares. Good friggin' luck stopping that. Why wouldn't you do that? I'd be all over that. If I'm Dubas and I'm like, listen, if this is going to be it, I'm going to go for it. If we win, awesome. If not, there's literally nothing else you could do. I'd also get Justin Hall off this friggin' roster as early as yesterday. I don't know why that's still not a thing right now, but I'd also do that, and I'd keep Ilya Lyubushkin, I'd just re-sign Rasmus Sandin, and I'd put him on the team. I don't know where. I'd put him somewhere, though. If this is Dubas and Keefe's last kick at the can, because it's getting to a point where your big four are coming up, and they're going to want a lot of money. They're already making a lot of money. You know what I mean? Do you got to trade him? No. But you've already rumored to be moving Kerfoot. Go make the move. Go send Kerfoot. Get JT Miller. Attach Robertson. Guess what? You know who else you have in your system? Matthew Knies, who's apparently this top six power forward left winger who could probably slot in right after JT Miller. Go send Kerfoot and Robertson for Miller. Because you also still have Nick Abbruzzese. You've got Pierre Engvall as part of your roster who can play in your bottom six. Your center depth's still good. If you want to move Tavares to the wing, you can slot Miller at center. It's wild how that works out beautifully for you. And then go sign Fleury. Go move off of Peter Mrazek and bring in a backup goaltender with a little bit of upside who could potentially be a guy. Mackenzie Blackwood was a starting goaltender for the World Junior Hockey Championships and at one point was the goalie of the future in New Jersey. I also think that's a buy low situation. Show me a bad team, I'll show you a bad goalie. Seriously. Like everyone who's kind of dunking on John Gibson for his stats lately, John Gibson hasn't been great the last couple seasons. You know who else hasn't been great the last couple seasons? The Ducks. Mackenzie Blackwood hasn't put up great numbers lately. You know who else hasn't put up great numbers lately? The Devils. Carter Hart fell off a little bit last year. You know who else fell off last year? The Flyers. It's not always on the goaltender. Sometimes it's the talent around the goaltender. You could get a goalie for real cheap. And because you're a little bit more stable of an organization, you could make him way better. Anybody thought Jack Campbell, before being traded to Toronto, was going to be a guy on the market that could make $5 million as a starting goaltender? No, but Toronto got him cheap, put him in a decent situation and scenario, gave him an opportunity, and now he's a potential starting goaltender for another team. Could even be Toronto next year. But if I'm the Leafs, go get Fleury, move Mrazek, trade Kerfoot and a prospector pick to Vancouver, go get Miller, call it a day. If not Miller, I don't know, go get Garland. Garland's got 4 years left at a very reasonable 4.9, but then he'll be a player that you'll want to trade in 2 to 3 years. So I'm going JT Miller because he put up nearly 100 points and he's only making 5.25 for another year. If it's your last season as a GM, why not do it? That's my thoughts on the team and what I think they should do. We'll see moving forward. Or make the move and go send Mrazek to the Rangers for Alexander Georgiev. That's the ideal situation. Be like, Georgiev, you're going to be our starting goaltender. Fleury's got 2 seasons. Then you're our guy. That's my ideal. I'd rather have Georgiev than Blackwood. I just think New Jersey would be a lot more inclined to make a deal for Mrazek than the Rangers would be. But that's just me. All right, last 2 things before we're done here. Dallas Stars signed goaltender Scott Wedgwood to a 2-year extension with an AAV of $1 million. He was acquired from the Coyotes last year at the deadline. It's a great fit. It's stability for Wedgwood. He gets to stay in Dallas. Ottinger's their starting goaltender. Wedgwood gets a 2-year deal. As a backup goaltender, it's almost impossible to get a multi-year deal. Wedgwood's happy with the money. Good for him. Good for the organization. Makes a lot of sense. And now apparently Jake DeBrusk's agent reportedly informed general manager Don Sweeney that he has rescinded his trade request and is happy to remain a Bruin moving forward. The 25-year-old initially made the request in November after then head coach Bruce Cassidy listed him as a healthy scratch due to his inconsistent play. Head coach is gone. All of a sudden he's like, got some opportunity here. He's averaged nearly 20 goals over his first three seasons, but last year struggled a little bit, only had 14 points in 41 games. A new coach will do wonders to you. Ask Cole Caulfield, right? Montreal switches head coaches. They get Marty St. Louis in there. Cole Caulfield goes on a tear. Could be the perfect storm for the Bruins and for Jake DeBrusk. So we'll see how he responds next season, but that is just the tip of the iceberg, folks. There is a lot more news in the draft, and there is free agency coming. I cannot friggin' wait. I hope you can either. That is it for the podcast today. Thank you, as always, for listening. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow me along on Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast, and follow my my articles at the Hockey Writers for Kyle Grimard under the Vancouver Canucks. There's a lot coming. Enjoy the chaos, the madness, the news, the rumors, and everything else in between. I'll see you next week. Until then, that's a wrap.